Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loray. Today, we're going to look at the president's threats to militarize the streets of the U.S. We'll do that later on in the program. Also, far-right groups are infiltrating some of the protests that are going on around the country. We'll talk about that in the first part of the program. Before we get there, though, two listener comments about yesterday's program. Yesterday, much of the show was about the weekend protests over George Floyd's killing. Here's what two listeners had to say.
Kevin Bradenton. One of the things that I think could be a possible solution, and I think that it will take time, but possibly withholding some of the bloated budget for the military, redirecting some of the money that we spend on useless projects like the F-35 and putting it into the schools in the districts that are the poorer districts in this country. That's just one thing. And then possibly maybe stop buying military equipment and putting it in the police force, like tanks and things like that, and take and redirect that money into some kind of community resources so that the community can see that you're doing something besides just trying to beat people down all the time. Let's just face facts. The military shouldn't be getting as much money as they do when the country is burning like it is.
Hi, I was listening to your program yesterday, and with much interest, I was at both protests Saturday and Sunday, and Sunday clearly was more organized and larger. It was just kind of a large parade, and it was done really well and handled well. The one on Saturday interested me. That was at 56 and Fowler, and it actually did have a couple sponsors. It had the USF Students for Democratic Society, which are members of the Tampa DSA, and they set up right there at the corner of Fowler and 50th. I don't think the Tampa Police Department really realized how big it would get, but it did grow. I think when I got there at 1, there were 65, 70 people. By 3 o'clock, there was well over 1,000. It got to the point where the crowd walked up to the Temple Terrace Police Department. They were in front there. There was probably a thousand people, probably more. They had shut down 56th Street, and they set it up for speakers. And it was all very peaceful. And they had a few speakers there talking about basically anti-racism and anti-capitalism and how that meets. The crowd was, I think, under 30. And my takeaway from that one on Fowler was it just shows you how the political establishment in Tampa, when they use these opportunity zones to build stadiums and continue with what Vinnick's doing, it's just pushing gentrification. And so anyway, that's just kind of what happened. The one at 56 and Fowler just kind of developed organically. As far as what happened at 30th and Bush, I think that was something else. One at 50th and Fowler was rather peaceful. It was just massive and just grew organically.
That's in Brooksville. You know, what we're seeing today has been a long time coming, and this George Floyd incident is just the final straw. Blacks in this country have suffered discrimination for decades. The majority of them are working poor. They live in blighted communities, and many of those communities are food deserts. That's even in Tampa Bay. You think they live that way by choice? No. It's white, racist rednecks in this country who want to hold them down and keep it that way. I think they call themselves conservatives. When we all know there are bad cops out there. We all have cell phones today, and it seems the bad cops and all these violent racists are just popping out of the woodwork. Well, these guys have always been there. This stuff we're now seeing on social media has been going on for years. Can you imagine how much of this stuff happens every day that we don't even see? And what does George Floyd having drugs in his system have to do with anything? Because I use drugs, you have the right to kill me? The war on drugs has done more damage to our country than drugs ever did. As for the riots, we all know there are thugs and hoodlums in the world. Anytime you get a large group of protesters, that kind of stuff always happens. These people that are doing this, they're the symptom. They're not the cause of this. But, hey, man, fear not. Our tweeting twit of a president has a brilliant idea to restore peace in the country. He wants to bring in the military and shoot everybody. Give me a break. You know, black folks are sick of the way they're treating this country, and a lot of white folks are sick of it, too. People are sick of it all over the world. Just watch the TV. We got a viral pandemic, racist cops, riots in the streets, and an idiot for a president.
Well, there you have three listener comments that came in after yesterday's program. This is WMNF in Tampa. Later on, we're going to talk about what the last caller mentioned, and that is the president's decision. At least he says he's going to send U.S. troops to the streets of the country if the governors don't crack down on protesters. Well, we're going to open up the phone lines later on in the program, but first of all, let me read this email that came in from Keith. Keith writes, "We fought against a tyrannical king largely because he used the military to take arms against citizens. To order the U.S. military to do the same is the most un-American thing a president can possibly do. This man is a threat to the Constitution and needs to be removed," writes Keith from Tampa. Well, crowds of protesters gathered again yesterday in St. Petersburg and Tampa, but they were largely peaceful. Hundreds of people held signs and shouted chants in outrage over the death of George Floyd, the Minneapolis man who died at the hands of police last week. In protests over the weekend, buildings burned and businesses were looted in Tampa. Police shot beanbags at protesters and deployed smoke bombs and other projectiles and gas. The Tampa Bay Times reports yesterday afternoon a large group stood in front of the St. Petersburg Police headquarters downtown. They took a knee. Instead of shouting chants, they pleaded with officers. They asked to speak with the chief of police and the deputy mayor. In Tampa, police escorted a group of about 50 protesters down Bayshore Boulevard to Fred Ballpark and later Hyde Park. Officers stopped traffic to allow protesters to cross the street yesterday. St. Pete police later said that they made four arrests last night following protests in front of the police department. They say the arrest came after several hours of the peaceful protests. The three people were arrested after the St. Pete police received information that a red SUV connected to the demonstrators had items stockpiled that could be used as projectiles. They say shortly before midnight last night, they located an SUV on the 1200 block of Central Avenue, and officers found a gas canister, glass bottles, bricks, a bag of large rocks, and a metal pipe. Officers arrested three people inside on charges of inciting to riot. Each were held on a $5,000 bond. St. Police also say they made a fourth arrest early this morning after a group of protesters returned to the police department about 1:15 a.m. They say protesters drove cars onto First Avenue North despite barricades to keep it closed to traffic. Police declared an unlawful assembly and gave demonstrators a warning to leave the area before discharging smoke bombs to disperse the group. At that point, one of the organizers of the protest was arrested. He's a 29-year-old man. He's charged with inciting a riot and is being held on $10,000 bond. Well, according to reading this from the Lakeland Ledger, according to a Black Lives Matter organizer, Mercedes Werbinski, as the Munn Park protest in Lakeland was drawing to a close over the weekend, a man in a red T-shirt, camouflage bandana around his face and sunglasses talked about how he had been pepper sprayed in Orlando and told people, "F the park, we need to be in the streets." He then urged protesters to go to the Lakeland Police Department. Werbinski and other Black Lives Matter organizers tried to stop them, but a crowd followed the man and two associates, none of whom have been identified, one block away to the police station on North Massachusetts Avenue. The crowd was peaceful at the station, but then a third group broke off from that, again led by the man in the red shirt, and walked north on Massachusetts Avenue, wound up at the corner of Memorial Boulevard and Florida Avenue, where they began blocking traffic at the major city intersection. Shakira Parker was one of the organizers of the peaceful march in East Tampa on Sunday. Yesterday, here on this program on WMNF, she said her group was aware that agitators calling for violence were involved in the protest on Sunday.
A lot of these folks coming out right now, just trying to get their message out as well.
One of the unique things that our organizations did is that we had safety marshals, and we had them trained prior. So one of the things, part of the training, is that we were able to identify agitators, and there were a group, I'd say, of 20, and they were dispersed in like maybe units of five. And after things were done and moved aside, they then came back to try to agitate the police. And then, of course, when you have a crowd and you see, you know, with that energy, then people are going to join along. And then that's when the police, you know, moved in with SWAT gear and then started shooting rubber bullets.
That was Shakira Parker, one of the organizers of the peaceful protest march in East Tampa on Sunday. Also, this was captured on TV, on WFTS-TV on Saturday night. Two men dressed in Hawaiian shirts standing next to a WFTS reporter were shouting a white nationalist slogan, Groiper. This took place Saturday night in Tampa.
What are y'all doing?
A lot of these folks is coming out right now, just trying to get their message out as well. So this is what we've been having going around here. I mean, when you think about what's been going on, it's just that these folks are coming out and they're enjoying the show about what's happening against the law.
So that was two guys, white guys, dressed in Hawaiian T-shirts shouting Groiper Saturday night in Tampa. And CNN Business is reporting that a Twitter account that tweeted a call to violence and claimed to be representing the position of Antifa was in fact created by a known white supremacist group, Twitter said yesterday. The company then removed the account. Revelation of the account comes as President Trump increasingly blames left-wing activists for violence occurring at protests across the country. The fake Antifa account said, alert, tonight's the night, comrades. Tonight we F the city and we move into the residential areas, the white hoods, and we take what's ours. And it was signed Black Lives Matter. Twitter said the account was in fact linked to Identity Europa, a white power fraternity. We're joined now by Mia Bloom, who has written about this. Mia is a professor at Georgia State University. And Mia Bloom, welcome to WMNF. Good to have you here.
Thank you for inviting me onto your program, and I hope that you and all your listeners are healthy and safe during these difficult times.
Yeah, these aren't difficult times. You wrote a piece for Just Security over the weekend that said that far-right infiltrators and agitators are in George Floyd protests, and it's an indicator of white supremacists. Tell us what you wrote in that article.
On Saturday, about 2.5 hours before Bill Barr went on to TV and said, all the violence is left-wing and Antifa. Just Security had published the piece I'd written overnight from Friday to Saturday. Because what had happened was when we saw protests, both in Minneapolis and then that night they had been protests in Atlanta that started out as peaceful protests, that later on over the course of the evening, the demographics of the protest changed as well as the nature of violence. The violence escalated, as many people might have seen, where the CNN building and the sign was defaced, shop windows were broken, and that was just the beginning of what we've been seeing for the last 3-4 days. I think it's important to understand that it's not one group, and there is a huge problem. If we're only going to focus on one side of the spectrum, it's like we're going into a fight with one hand tied behind our back. We cannot ignore the fact that, yes, there are probably elements of violent Antifa embedded within the peaceful protesters. The majority of the protesters are peaceful, but that there's also all these right-wing groups who are masquerading as Antifa. And I even had posted on Saturday after the article pictures from places like Portland and Seattle, people dressed up as Antifa, but they were doing the hand signs to show that they were right-wing, that they were actually this other group called Proud Boys.
What hand signs would they use?
It's that hand signal that, you know, was fairly anodyne up until recently, the okay hand signal, but not okay like upwards, but okay downwards, where you're pointing your fingers down.
There was a picture of a man dressed in a clown mask, too, in Tampa on Saturday during one of the protests, and then we had these two guys in Hawaiian shirts shouting Groiper in Tampa on Saturday. Are those either the Hawaiian shirts, the Groiper chant, or the clown mask, are those identified with the far right?
Yes, those are all identified with Boogaloo. So Boogaloo, which is a take on this terrible, you know, the Electric Boogaloo movie, I think they started it almost ironically, but that's where the word Boogaloo comes from. Boogaloo is now code within the far-right circles for the eventual coming civil war, which will be a race war. Now, the way you identify Boogaloo, there's one of three ways. There is these Hawaiian shirts, and so we're seeing at a lot of the protests men who are fully kitted out with automatic weapons and other kinds, you know, tactical gear, wearing a Hawaiian vest. The other way is the clown, because, you know, they're basically saying the clown world. And that's where a lot of people link, if your listeners saw the last Joker movie, people were basically saying that that movie has been adopted by the right wing. And then the third element is there's a bunch of patches that are associated with Boogaloo. So they've taken Boogaloo and they've distorted it in some way so that there's like big igloo for Boogaloo. Or they'll have an igloo and the igloo has a Hawaiian print on it. So there's all these different ways of identifying. What I did was on my Twitter account, I posted something that Antifa actually distributed within Atlanta, a pamphlet to warn people who are actually Antifa to say, if you see these symbols, these are extremist right-wing symbols, whether it's for the neo-Nazis or the Boogaloo, the Proud Boys, the Three Percenters, the Oath Keepers. There is a whole universe of right-wing groups that, if your listeners want to know more about it, on the Anti-Defamation League website and on the Southern Poverty SPLC website, Southern Poverty Law Center website, you can find little descriptions of all the groups and what the logos look like.
We're talking with Mia Bloom, who's a professor at Georgia State University. She's a professor of communications and Middle East studies, and she's written a piece for Just Security about how right-wingers are infiltrating the George Floyd protests around the country. So why would right-wingers join the protests as a way to start a race war? What are the mechanics of that? How do they envision this happening?
Well, and in many ways, what they've been trying to do has succeeded because, again, we aren't talking about police brutality. We aren't talking about the fact that so many people of color, both black and brown, have been targeted for decades. And what's happened now is we're talking about the property damage and looting and the rioting. So really, it's a way of undermining the legitimacy of what began as peaceful protests in order to also exacerbate tensions. So we have reports from different parts of the country where these Boogaloo types, you know, wearing a Hawaiian shirt, are walking around and they are handing young people of color bricks. Like they're handing out bricks in order to facilitate breaking windows. They want to see the clashes between the protesters and the police. They want to see what the president has done by putting troops on American soil. You know, this is all part of the plan. The plan is initiate so much conflict and tension that it results in a race war, and that is really this almost attempt to foment chaos, as well as undermine the original message of the protest, which is that we need to have a limit on the kinds of police powers that we've seen up until now.
So they ultimately want the federal government to crack down on the protesters, the people that are protesting police brutality around the country.
Right, and so the Boogaloo Boys, as well as all of these groups, Proud Boys, Three Percenters, Oath Keepers, they are going to try to really stir the pot. What's important to remember is that they don't need to keep doing it all the time. All they need to do is they need to light the match. The kindling, unfortunately, is already there. And so by doing this, what we know, and so just that your listeners are familiar with me, I've been working on terrorism and counterterrorism from the jihadi group for many, many years, since before 9/11. And so we know what the playbook looks like. It becomes a tit-for-tat violence in which at every iteration, so each time around the merry-go-round, the violence escalates. And this is in part, when terrorist groups are doing it, it's on purpose. Because what they are trying to do is they're trying to show the population, look how brutal these guys are. And in many ways, this is the playbook that we've seen, whether it's Hamas, in the Palestinian territories, or even in places like Peru with the Shining Path. This is the same sort of ABCs of insurgency and violence.
So when the Attorney General Barr comes out yesterday and talks about Antifa as being the source of all this violence, is he playing, and he wants to call Antifa a terrorist group. Is that part of what the far right hopes for?
Absolutely. It's exactly what the far right hopes for. It's what the Republicans hope for. There's a few problems with that. The first thing is when the president decided that, you know, he tweeted that he was going to designate Antifa as a terrorist group. We don't have a domestic terrorism statute. So terrorism, the designation is called an FTO, a foreign terrorist organization. Antifa is not foreign. Not only that, it's not really an organization. It's more like a movement. And so the problem is it's not a cohesive group in the way that Al-Qaeda was under bin Laden or ISIS was under Baghdadi. It's very hard to, anyone who studies Antifa will tell you, including lots of people who, after the president tweeted, said, you know, this is just grandstanding. By blaming Antifa, and I don't want to say that there's no Antifa, and I certainly don't want to say that we don't see Antifa violence, especially on the West Coast, but by only looking at Antifa, we are turning a blind eye to the rising right wing, as well as the fact is it allows the right wing to do these cosplay, dress up like Antifa, and still engage in acts of violence and foment chaos.
I have to say, though, that, you know, I think the nation needs a group that stands up to fascism. And these are like the people that volunteered for the Lincoln Brigade in 1938. They saw the signs of fascism in Europe, and they were the ones that were the first ones to stand up to it. So, you know,
But you know what Antifa stands for, right?
Anti-fascist.
Anti-fascism, right. So I think we need to have a better understanding of what the groups are doing and who they are. But, you know, democracy is anti-fascism. I think the country can be anti-fascism and stand up to fascism. I'm not sure about groups who, you know, and again, this is my own personal opinion. I wasn't pro-Antifa even when they were trying to boycott Milo, you know, the racist speaker
who was going to University of California, Berkeley.
And at Berkeley. So yeah. I'm basically going to say that I don't like violence that is enacted, even if it's a cause with which I agree. Hmm. I am personally of the mind that there are other ways to get your point across and to make a difference and try to change the system. And so perhaps, you know, I'm not sufficiently liberal or I'm not sufficiently woke or all of these other things. I'll accept that. I'm just not a...
We won't go down that road anymore, but we're talking with Mia Bloom, who's a professor at Georgia State University, and she's written about the far right infiltrating some of the protests around the country. Mia, there's a big mystery out there, and that is there's a video online that's been viewed by millions of people, and it depicts what appears to be the AutoZone in Minneapolis at the heart of the first night of violent protests in Minneapolis. And a guy who's dressed in a very sophisticated face mask is breaking the windows initially at the AutoZone, and there's nobody else around except a guy carrying a pizza and the camera person. But talk about that video for a moment and why this plays into what you're warning about.
I had seen people distributing the video online, and so when I started to write the article for Just Security, I made very clear that I am not someone who embraces conspiracy theories. You know, I'm very critical of conspiracy theories, partly because when you study the Middle East, conspiracy theories are everywhere. You know, oh, 9/11 was an inside job or some other ridiculousness that you hear, you know, like the Pizzagate. I'm not someone who automatically embraces those. But when people I respected who were in national security began circulating the video and basically saying, it looked like he was a police officer. And as the video circulated more and more, many people came forward, including a woman who claimed to have been his former fiance, to say, yeah, he's a police officer in the St. Paul Police. And so that's where it gets a little bit confusing. Now, of course, St. Paul Police issued a statement, and then they said that, no, you know, he has a perfectly good alibi, and he's not the person, except everyone else is looking at this individual wearing the gas mask and saying this looks like the officer. So, you know, this is where I think I'm checking the name, Jacob Peterson. So this is where the problem is in the days after George Floyd's murder, that the, you know, when you have dueling Emmy reports that we have right now that put into question the responsibility, the problem is as the St. Paul Police Department issued the statement saying that, no, that was not Officer Peterson, a lot of people don't believe them, especially when you have so many people coming forward and saying, he's wearing the gloves I gave him for Christmas. You know, I was engaged to him. I recognize him. So they've just basically shut down that conversation. And I think that we just don't know.
And it does not look, I mean, I've done interviews and done a little bit of investigation into fake videos. This does not look like a fake video. It looks like a guy in a very sophisticated gas mask and a hoodie. You only see his eyes, but he is definitely breaking the windows at what appears to be the AutoZone in Minneapolis. And he's committing a crime. He's certainly committing property damage. So you'd think that the Minneapolis. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I was agreeing with you. But not only that, the protesters who were in Minneapolis at the AutoZone, who were protesting George Floyd's murder, they looked at him and they stopped and they said, who are you? That's why we actually have other videos. All these guys are taking videos and following him to say, who are you? And they would use an expletive, are you the effing police? And he stuck out like a sore thumb. He came in, didn't talk to anybody. He destroyed a bunch of the windows. And then when people started filming him, he ran away.
Very mysterious. So, Mia, I mean, how dangerous do you think the far right is in the U.S.?
Well, what happens is, and I sort of explained who I was in part as a preamble. You know, when you've been working in terrorism and you are a legitimate scholar, you're going to be the first person to say that terrorism is fairly statistically insignificant in the grand scheme of things, that you have a better chance of being hit by lightning twice than being killed by a terrorist. The problem was, since 9/11, we have only focused, for the most part, on jihadi terrorism, and we have ignored all the right wing, and we've allowed the right wing to, you know, quadruple in size and grow and metastasize with all these groups, like an alphabet soup of groups. When you look at the data, when you look at the number of terrorist attacks that occurred within the United States from 2010 to 2018, 76% of those attacks were right-wing. 24% were jihadi. And this has been validated by the New America Institute, by the Anti-Defamation League, and by the University of Maryland that keeps track of all the terrorist attacks. They have a Department of Homeland Security Center of Excellence. That's what their job was. So the fact that you're only going to look at Antifa and you're not going to look at the right-wing, when we know walking into this that the right wing has been responsible for 76% of the terrorist attacks within the United States in the previous 10 years, is very problematic.
And the Trump administration has essentially disbanded that part of the federal government that's looking into the danger from the far right.
Well, and they undermine it, and they basically, you know, dismiss, and partly, you know, in the uncomfortable truth, is that when someone killed Heather Heyer in Charlottesville, President Trump didn't call them terrorists. You know, if there is Antifa members who are destroying property, and like I said, these groups include a lot of different kinds of people who are using the protests as cover, including people who are just opportunistically looting, people who are using the protests as a cover in order to go in and get a Birkin bag or get Louis Vuitton or whatever it is that they're stealing. If we're only going to be looking at Antifa, we're going to once again ignore where the vast majority of the violence is likely coming from.
Mia Bloom, thank you so much for coming on WMNF. If people want to read the article that you wrote, what's the best way to find it?
Well, if you go to the Just Security, so it's Just Security website, it's right there. And I think it's, I've been posting it on Twitter. On Twitter, I'm Mia M. Bloom. But if you just Google me, you'll probably find it.
All right. Well, Mia Bloom, thanks a lot. Thanks for coming on. Yeah, it's great to talk to you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
And I hope you continue to enjoy good health and stay safe.
And I hope the same for you. Thank you, Mia. Thank you, Mia. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Mia Bloom is a professor at Georgia State University. She's a professor of communications and Middle Eastern studies. And she wrote a piece for Just Security that's that looks at the far-right infiltration of protests around the country in the last few days. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. And if you want to comment about what Mia Bloom said, you can email us here in the studio. The address is dj@wmnf.org. In Minneapolis, George Floyd's brother yesterday said violence isn't going to bring his brother back. Terrence Floyd is asking for calm following the widespread unrest in Minneapolis and some other cities around the country. This is part of what he said yesterday.
What are y'all doing? Y'all doing nothing, because that's not going to bring my brother back at all. That's what we're going to get him, because we're going to fool them. Yeah. They think we're going to do this. They think we're going to do something, and we're going to switch it on them.
That's right.
Let's switch it up, y'all. Let's switch it up.
Yes.
Amen. Do this peacefully. Because that's not going to bring my brother back at all. It may feel good for the moment, just like when you drink. But when it comes down, you're going to wonder what you did.
Terrence Floyd, George Floyd's brother, yesterday in Minneapolis. And you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. If you want to comment about anything you've heard here so far, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. Well, as we've been hearing all day on the news, both the NPR news and on cable news and on your phone and even on the WMNF news, President Trump is threatening to send the U.S. military into American cities to quell violence. Here's Sagar Magani. We're going to hear him twice.
As President Trump prepared to address the nation amid another day of protests, a remarkable split-screen moment was developing outside the White House. Just a minute into his remarks, the president declared himself on the side of law and order.
An ally of all peaceful protesters.
The kind who had gathered in Lafayette Park across from the White House. Just before the president was to start speaking, officers suddenly started forcing them back with tear gas. Minutes later, a first, the president walked out the White House gates through the park that had been cleared for him to stroll to St. John's Episcopal Church, which was damaged in the protests. He did not reference that or George Floyd, instead posing with a Bible before leaving. New York's governor slammed it as shameful, using the military to push out peaceful protesters for a photo op. Sagar Magani, Washington. President Trump says he'll deploy the military to states hit hard by violent protests unless governors do more on their own. Amid some of the most widespread racial unrest since the 1960s, the president told governors on a video conference they look like fools for not calling in more of the National Guard. Later,
mayors and governors must establish an overwhelming law enforcement presence until the violence has been quelled.
And he'll send in the military to quickly solve the problem if they don't. Officials in New York and other states say the president does not have the unilateral right to do that against the will of local governments. Washington's Democratic governor is dismissing the president's comments as the ranting of an insecure man trying to look strong. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Two reports from Sagar, who I think is one of the best radio reporters that the AP has. Well, okay, let's open up the phone lines. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. And you are listening to Radioactivity on WMNF in Tampa. I'm Rob Lori. Thanks for tuning in. And let's take these calls. We're going to go to Mike, who's in Land O'Lakes. Mike, thank you for calling. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob. You might have covered this with your guest earlier, but the question I have is, what is the end game? What is supposed to be the end game for these far-right groups? I mean, the ones trying to cause unrest, cause what they were saying, like a basically race riots and things like that. If they pull this off, what's the end result? I mean, I look at some of these, you know, their Facebook pages or whatever they have, the different things that they publish, and it's usually like, oh, freedom or the Constitution or whatever. But really, if you're starting a race war, what are they looking to win in a race war?
All right. Well, this is what I've read a lot about this. This is what they want. They want chaos. They want some things, some institutions to fail, and they want a federal crackdown, and they want to bring that federal crackdown and the local police and the sheriff's department to crack down on groups like Antifa, the left-wing groups.
Right.
And they want to pretend that it's, the danger to the country and the groups that are causing the damage to the country are liberal, progressive, left-wing, maybe even will go as far as anarchist groups, and by bringing the military, the full force of military, down to round these people up, you know, call them terrorists, arrest them because they're a terrorist group, put them in jail. That you've once and for all, they think, defeated the left. And once you've defeated the left and put them all in jail or kill them or whatever, then you have a country that looks more like what you want as a far right winger.
So the end goal is basically mass incarceration of a certain population and possibly genocide, correct?
Possibly, yeah.
That's just terrifying, but all right, that's kind of where I thought.
Yeah, Mike, thanks a lot. Thank you for that. Good to hear from you. We've got an open line, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Charles in Bradenton. Charles, you're on. What would you like to say?
First of all, I want to thank you for taking the call, and secondly, I enjoyed you and the dialogue between you and Ms. Bloom. Learned a lot from it. You know, Henry David Thoreau said that there are 1,000 hacking at the branches of fear to one digging at the root. And can you hear me?
Yeah, Charles, we're waiting for you.
Another call is coming in, trying to interfere. But I'm just going to basically say this, that I think the underlying root of the conflict we see here and around the world has a lot to do, not so much with these symptomatic things that we see, but the kind of cosmology and theology of separation that we see in the world, where it's us against them, where we compare and we engage in conflict. And until that template changes, we're going to continue to see these uprisings and these disconnects between human beings. And I think Einstein said it well when he stated, you cannot use the same energy that created a problem to get rid of that problem. For example, state-sponsored murder through our execution of human beings in order to deter murder. So we use the same kind of energy to try to get rid of problems that created the problem. And then Dr. King said this, that we've got to learn to live together as brothers and sisters, fully entity. One, I know this sounds very philosophical, but it's something that is at the core of the conflict we see everywhere. And until that template changes and we begin to see each other as one interconnected, we're going to continue to see these things that lessons he tries to teach us. Even
yeah. Yeah, and Charles, I'm sorry to say you're breaking up, so I'm going to let you go, but thank you very much. Yeah, I think you speak very wisely. Thank you. Dennis in Oldsmar says, I finally binge-watched the HBO series The Plot Against America. It is a very, very thinly veiled critique of the current administration using World War II and the American Jewish community as a backdrop. If you have not seen it, it is a must. If nothing else, nothing else is taken from it. It shows just how quickly fascism spreads and how easily it is to dupe the majority of the populace into hating and hurting the convenient scapegoat of the moment. Sadly, I see this show morphing from fiction to fact at a very rapid pace, writes Dennis in Oldsmar. Dennis, thank you for that. I haven't seen it. I want to watch it. I don't get a chance to binge that much. Joe writes this. had never heard of Antifa until Trump used the term in one of his Reframe the Chaos rants. Looked it up, says that they've been around since 1946 and that their main purpose is leftist response to fascist and Nazi philosophy and alt-right organizations. This would be worthy of an in-depth segment on WMNF, writes Joe. Yeah, I've covered Antifa a bunch. There was a protest in Berkeley a few months ago, and we did a whole show about it when far-right groups showed up in Berkeley as a way, I think, to try to trigger the liberal population in Berkeley into committing violence against what essentially are fascists. And it didn't turn out that way, but it's happened in Portland, it's happened in Seattle, it's happened in Berkeley, it happens all over the West Coast, as our guest Mia Bloom was saying. Doug writes this, not condoning the violence, there's more to this than the far right. The far right is worrisome, though, but the killing of George Floyd occurred in broad daylight. Four were fired with weak or no indictments. Why were they fired? How can they fix it after getting it wrong the first three times? That's Doug's email. Doug, I hope I read that right. And then DeMarco writes, President Trump, the Attorney General, the Trump mob, and the Republican Party are yet again gaslighting the U.S., denying the truth to the American people concerning where the violence and the destruction surrounding police abuse protests is coming from. There is no evidence that the left is causing any violence. There is, however, plenty of evidence that white supremacists, right-wing violence, extremists are actually causing this turmoil. You know, I've not done a study. I'm sure there are angry people on the left. I don't doubt that at all. And I think some of them might have thrown stuff at the cops. So nobody's really studied it. But I think the danger is when you've got far-right groups infiltrating these protests and urging the violence. That's I think, where some of the biggest danger comes. Let's go back to the phones and hear from some more people. We're going to go to Danny in Tampa. Danny, thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob. Back in the 60s in the Vietnam protest, there was a lot of right-wing infiltrators also. I remember that
there were books written about it, that police were paid to go in and stir up anti-war crowds into committing things that would horrify the general population. That's part of the reason Richard Nixon won in 1968. He was able to point to the demonstrations and the massive protests in 67 and 68. There were civil rights protests. There were riots against police abuse in cities across the country. There were Vietnam War protests. Mm-hmm. And some of them got out of hand. Some of them were police riots, like the riot in Chicago, where the police just beat up demonstrators. But Richard Nixon was able to use that unrest as a way to win the presidency in November of 1968.
Well, I remember the law and order. And, you know, there's a lot of similarities between them. You know, this Trump has studied Nixon a lot. He's even said, that he has. And,
well, that's why he's using the phrase law and order president. He proudly boasted that yesterday. That echoes exactly, Danny, Nixon
exactly,
of 1968.
Rob. Yeah. Exactly, Rob. You know, and I'd like to say also that that stunt that he pulled yesterday, I mean, who was surprised by that? I mean, you know, I was watching it on TV. It took place in real time. And then you see everybody, William Barr, Ivanka, Jared, everybody walking with him. Then he takes out his Bible, and the view of the right wing is just like, well, that was his Bible. How terrible is that? I mean, he's waving a Bible and invoking faith. Everybody knows it was a stunt. Everybody knows that he's just a scoundrel, and that's exactly what he did. And we're not surprised. And then, Rob, on top of that, he doesn't even sit there. He doesn't even take the microphone and talk about the pain that is going on, the suffering, and like Obama did, and every other president, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush. He's not capable, Rob. He is just not.
Danny,
capable.
do you think our conservative evangelical friends think that President Trump has read the Bible and knows any part of the Bible, or do they believe that by him holding up a Bible yesterday that somehow he's familiar with the teachings of Jesus?
I'm glad you asked that question. There's a couple of them that come over to our parties, and they're very nice people. You know, they're from the church. My sister goes to the church there, Christ the King Church, and all that. But I've asked them, and they said yes. They think that he has read the Bible and is knowledgeable and is a true Christian. And he told Chris Cuomo years ago the reason he gets audited is because he's a Christian.
All right. Danny, thanks a lot. Thank you. Good to hear from you. 813-239-9663. And I want to ask you, when the president says that if the governors don't toughen up, he's going to send the U.S. military into American cities, what do you make of that? How do you feel as an American knowing that the U.S. military might be deployed to American cities? What do you think? Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Harvey writes this, governors of the states with violent protests had already called in for the military, writes Harvey. They wanted the assistance from the National Guard. Our president's call for the military was political and redundant. He is quick to act against the threat of civil unrest. Where was he when the states needed help with COVID? That's Harvey's email. And Sound Guy writes, lawlessness is rampant in the White House. Who is he kidding, writes Sound Guy. And Ernie writes this, I appreciate your guest's insight into groups inciting violence. However, she should not include the Oath Keepers. She is either ignorant of the group or purposely spreading misinformation. Their website is there for anyone to see whether their tenets are clearly stated. That's Ernie in Port Richey. Ernie, I've met some Oath Keepers. They were here during the Republican National Convention. I talked to them. They are part of the far right. There is no doubt in my mind. And we can have a longer conversation about that. Let's take some more phone calls. We're going to go to Jeff in Tarpon Springs. Jeff, thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
Yeah, as far as I knew, I thought Antifa was around to, you know, counter the, what's that society that all of the presidents and, you know, everybody's in, all the Republicans, they're part of.
The Federalist Society, no, they're there. Yeah. They're there to counter fascism, and they're there to counter what is a growing movement in this country of the far right. And
I understand
they're,
that. Bro,
they're not. They're really. They. I've never seen them protest the Federalist Society. Although the Federalist Society is everywhere, but that's not who they're protesting. No.
And the Federalist Society is the ones that are going to make this place fascist because they want to take over.
Well, the Federalist Society is now the group that if you want to be a federal judge or if you want to be a judge at the Florida Supreme Court or if you want to be a U.S. Supreme Court judge, that's who you join. And it is a far-right conservative libertarian group. But I think that even members, you know, we'll see what the U.S. Supreme Court does in some of these significant cases that are coming up. Jeff, we've done shows, many shows about the Federalist Society. But let's right now just concentrate on what's happening today, and I promise I'll get back to the Federalist Society. We've had a lot of good guests on that topic. Let's go to Victoria in Tampa. Victoria, thank you for calling. What would you like to say? Hi, Victoria.
Hi,
you're live on the radio.
Oh, do you hear me?
Yeah, you're live. Go ahead, Victoria. What's up?
Okay, perfect. So I've noticed a lot of, I want to call it propaganda, where they're posting pictures of NYPD officers, Minnesota officers, marching with protesters. But what I really feel like the media isn't showing is them gassing people, is them inciting violence. I know you mentioned this earlier in the show, but, you know, there was a woman who was pregnant who was harmed, you know, shot in the stomach with a rubber bullet. And they're not just made of rubber. They're actual bullets encased in rubber. They cause harm. They cause permanent damage. And I feel like a lot of people are upset over rioting and everything, but we can't tell black people how they should react to oppression. You know, everybody wants to quote Martin Luther King and talk about peace, but white people killed him. The government killed him. He's not alive, you know, and he wasn't anti-violence. We tried anti-violence. We tried peace, and it didn't work. Black people have been oppressed for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. And when you have that bottleneck, the George Floyd circumstance, you expect them to just move on? It's not logical. It's not fair. It's not it's just not kind and it's not humane.
Yeah, well, Victoria, I agree with everything you said, except you said that nonviolence didn't work, and nonviolence did work. We had the greatest revolution in the 1960s, and it led to voting rights, and it led to elections, and it led to more freedom for people. Now, is there equal freedom? No, there's not equal freedom, but nonviolence did work, and we hear you. You're saying that violence is justified in this case. So, Victoria, thank you for saying that. We are a peaceful station, so I don't agree with that. But, Victoria, thanks a lot for calling in. Let's go to Daryl in Tampa. Daryl, thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob. Yeah, let me just say something briefly. About Donald Trump wanting to send in the military, I'm not quite sure on this, but isn't that a violation of posse comitatus?
You know, there are two laws, and one was written after 9/11, and one was written in the early 1800s, the Anti-Insurrection Act, and both of those give him the okay, and the language seems to be wide open, I got to say. And I just looked at the law this morning. I don't have it in front of me, but... I would like to get a guest on, a law professor, to ask about posse comitatus, because that law, as you pointed out, says that the U.S. military shouldn't be deployed domestically. But there's these two exceptions, as I understand it. And again, I'm not a lawyer, but it looks like there's two exceptions in the law. And I think that's what the president is trying to drive through.
Right. Let me say this real quickly. So you're going to use the 182nd Airborne jumping, coming from the sky, using six bayonets, and they're not there to police. They're there to kill. That's what their job is. That's what they're trained to do. Leave that alone. But let me say something. I was in College Hill when the protest went down in front of that police precinct.
On Sunday?
On Sunday.
Okay.
And there was a lady who called in here on one of your shows on Sunday, very, you know, vehemently and a lot of rhetoric and saying a lot of stuff and hot-headedness. Let me tell you what hot-headedness got you. It got people to vandalize and do whatever store in Belmont Heights in that project. So now they didn't have any place to go except out of their community. I'll tell you what hot-headed got you. Every Walgreens drugstore in the nation was shut down, so people could not get their medicine, no matter what your age is, you know, from Walgreens. Let me tell you what hot-headedness got you. A gas station being burned down, and I always pose this question as I leave right now. Busting into a Target or whatever store to steal a television or grab a bottle of liquor or something else, how is that going to help your cause?
All right, Daryl, thanks. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you for your views. I'm sorry you had to wait so long. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Michael in Lake Wales. Michael, you're on 88.5 FM.
Yes, I watched a video interview of Yuri Bezmenov that was done in 1985, and he was a defector, a Russian defector, KGB intelligence agent. And he said that the steps for destabilizing a country, there were three steps that they used. The first was demoralization of the population, which takes generations. Then the second step is destabilization, which is what we're witnessing now. And then the third step is restabilization, which is when the tanks roll in, which is what Trump is threatening. The guy's name is Bezmenov, B-E-Z-M-E-N-O-V. And it was a 1985 interview on video that you can see on YouTube.
Okay, well, look it up. All right, Michael, thanks a lot. Thanks for the phone call. You're listening to WMNF Tampa 88.5 FM. And let's go to Bruce in Tarpon Springs. Bruce, thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
I think a good reaction to troops coming into town, I don't think it's going to happen. I don't hope it happens, would be for everybody going into self-imposed lockdown. Go in your house, shut the door, leave the troops on the street, just scratching their heads, not knowing what to do.
Okay. All right, Bruce, thanks. Let's hope it doesn't go that far. Let's go to John in St. Pete. John, thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob, just a quick comment. You know, a bunch of my friends and I have been wondering when Trump was going to start a war, and None of us thought it would be here.
Yeah. That's true. I think the president thinks that starting war with China or Iran is the way out of this.
Well, he's starting one here. Yeah. So we're in it. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Well, if you want to comment about today's show, you can call us up at 813-238-8001. This is the comment line, 813-238-8001. And leave your comment about the show on extension 115, and I'll play it back tomorrow. A bunch of emails have come in, and I haven't read them. DeMarco writes, the white supremacist right-wing extremists who are actually causing the arson and promoting destruction have long been talking about liberal genocide, writes DeMarco. And some of these emails are unsigned. Charles says this, do you have evidence of Antifa being involved in any unprovoked